2019 has been weird. It's been a weird year, hasn't it?
Yes.
I don't see how, man.
Man, fucking video games at the beginning were one thing, and now they're just like streamed in your web browser to your phone where you can play the latest games.
In when I was in Japan for my honeymoon, here I go again. I was at a shopping pavilion and I peed on a video game in a toilet. So 2019, hey, guess what? You're not there yet. I don't know what year that was in, but 2019 is like, oh, we're Microsoft streaming shit onto a Sony phone. And it's like, I peed on a game. Like, it doesn't matter yet.
I'm trying to translate what you just said. You went to Japan. You put a video game in a toilet and you peed on it?
I didn't put it there. I didn't put it there. I don't know, man.
You put Hideo Kojima's Metal Gear Solid 4
there was like a special P controller that I blasted and it made Mario jump or whatever. But anyway, I don't care that Stadia is whatever, man. Pee on a video game. 2020, pee on video. Pee on games.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best year of the year.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and this was not that.
My name is Chris Plant. When are we?
My name is Russ Frushick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, a game of the year show that's kind of like a book club and has varied wildly in format since it's began its new iteration. We're going to settle into a groove here real soon, as soon as the games return to us. But for now, we are going to talk about 2019, holistically speaking. The best moments, the worst moments. What do we love? What do we hate? Were we milquetoast on? No, that doesn't make the cut. Strong feelings only.
I do want to mention we did spend two full episodes talking about the video games that we love and or hate, mostly that we love. So this is more about sort of like trends and themes and common occurrences than it is like, hey, Sekiro let you cut, guys.
And it did.
It did let you cut, guys. Actually, that is my first topic, is Sekiro let you cut, guys. Yeah. This is less a discussion of the game and its merits, but a discussion about this was a game that did let you cut, guys, with and his sword was pretty big.
Yeah,
so
could have been bigger.
So that was my big moment in 2019.
Okay, who wants to start? Russell?
I suppose I'll start. So when we started this year, there was a phenomenon. I guess 2018 was the like year of the Battle Royale. It sort of like became a thing. Like a big deal in 2018, and we played a lot of PUBG and we all had a good time and it was lovely. And 2019's been weird because it started in this like state where Apex Legends came out like out of nowhere, and then Fortnite did all sorts of crazy stuff, but I'm like, I can't do them anymore because I'm bad and I don't know
all
what
right.
to do.
So we're kicking things off with Russ saying, a lot of shit happened with Battle Royale, gang. I don't know. I got bad at them.
I mean, I did. I got really bad at them.
Okay.
Well, I was pretty bad before, but now it's like...
Question for you. Is the trend that you're describing that a lot of Battle Royale games came out this year, or is the trend that you got old and now you're not good at video games?
I mean, it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. I would also
the
add,
eternal
like,
trend.
The trend, the one-way forever trend, Russell.
It's more that, like, okay, so, like, Apex was really the, like, one main big new Battle Royale that came out that, like, landed. But since then, I feel like there's been, like, a push away from the genre. I don't know. Am I crazy?
I don't think a push away is a fair way of categorizing it, because first of all, like, I don't think anybody sitting here really even has a comprehensive understanding of the actual scope of Fortnite, let alone PUBG. PUBG is still like the bigger one in terms of like mobile and international markets. So like, you know, I think that it was a mainstream hit genre in a way that few things have been in a long time. And maybe that has died down just a little bit, but that's not to say that like Fortnite shutting down for a week or whatever while they released Fortnite 2.0 and having an in-fiction end of the world catastrophe, like that's they did so much super fascinating stuff this year.
I feel like it's going to be in that category, though. Like, this whole genre is moving over to a, like, I will enjoy it from afar. You know, I dipped into Apex and everybody got good at that a lot quicker than they did at PUBG, I think. And I think the challenge, the hurdle for Battle Royale games going forward is I think that it's going to, the vocabulary of play for these games has, or the meta, maybe I should say, of the Battle Royale game is, has advanced enough to, I think that that fall off for casual players is going to get quicker and quicker. Like, I feel like there's so much meta around Battle Royale games that, like, it's going to be harder and harder to get, like, people who don't obsessively play them into the ecosystem.
Pseudo counterpoint. I think that's true for, like, Apex Legends and PUBG, right? But I feel like Fortnite's method is just to be trends the video game, that it's the gameplay meta has almost in a way fallen off. And now they're like, I don't know. It's Marvel week, baby. Thanos is here. Oh, do you know what time it is? Star Wars time. JJ's here. JJ, tell us about Star Wars. I mean, the beginning of the new Star Wars, the very first words in it, in the title crawl, which I won't spoil on the off chance somebody hasn't seen it yet, are a reference to a thing that only happens in Fortnite. That's bonkers and has nothing to do with the video game now. And I think, like, that is what Fortnite is. Like, it's left the Battle Royale genre, and it's like, I don't know, we're just a place where, like, millions of teenagers congregate to find out what insert character has to say in the next Disney movie.
The space war is getting really bad. Blunt Wrap 69 lowers his nutsack onto his defeated opponent's grill. Justin, speaking of, we're all old people who can't hang with relevant genres anymore. Do you want to talk about your sort of...
Yeah, I want to get into sort of the auto chess, auto battlers, that whole genre.
Yeah, get into it, baby.
Get into it.
Let's hear what you got to say.
I feel like we shouldn't have bookended these, Russ. I thought that you'd be coming from a position of more authority. Y'all, I've tried on this one. I don't know. I've looked at video. I have listened to podcasts. I have read things about the auto chess genre. And friends, I'm here to tell you, I think it's a prank on the old. I think auto chess is a prank on the old. Like, we'll nod knowingly. Chess. Yeah, automatic chess. I got it. I'm with it, kids. And now let me just fire it up. And it's not a real program. It's like the reverse of Frog Fractions. It, like, looks like a real game, but is not actually playable in any conceivable fashion.
It's wild to me that it didn't click with you, no pun intended, because of your love for the clicker genre. Doesn't it kind of seem like a clicker, a competitive clicker roguelike?
I would have no way of no. You know what? I feel like I'm not going to be able to get into new genres that are multiplayer focused. If there was a sort of a single player lore heavy.
Totally different game.
Yeah, completely different game. Thank you, of course. Maybe that would be the one. But I guess this is just my confession that, like, I don't know how to get... They look great.
They look so good.
Wild. The things are happening all over. Do you guys have any more insight into this than I do? So it's not just like the old man show.
Well, I do know that, like, so Auto Chess came out and that was like the first one of these. And it was a mod for Dota. And it launched. And then Riot, who makes League of Legends as well as billions of dollars, was like, something going on here. And basically made one that was, like, dramatically more accessible than Auto Chess, and kind of crushed Auto Chess into dirt, which is a problem for them. And I don't know how they're going to sort of bounce back from that. So now you really just have...
Dota Underlords isn't out on... Wait, which is the one that is out on... Dota Underlords is out on iOS, right?
And technically so is Auto Chess, but I do feel like...
I don't think Teamfight Tactics is, though, at this
point. No, it's not.
Point,
Teamfight
though.
Tactics
okay.
is not. But it does feel like Riot and Valve sort of, like, looked at this idea and they were like, hey, we can do this better, and sort of, like, dominated. It is sort of like the PUBG situation with Fortnite, where they just sort of dominated the current competition.
Interestingly, Russ, your contribution seems to be more of a survey or perhaps a history without explaining to me what the fuck the game
oh, yeah.
is.
So
eh?
The issue with that is that I have no fucking idea.
plant. This is the first year I have not, well, not the first year, because I didn't, it's been a couple years since I've been to E3. The last one I went to was, I think 2016.
We didn't have our finger necessarily completely on the pulse this year, but just sort of like, you know, quick look at it, seemed like it really kicked ass this year. From what I heard, checking tweets, and like everybody came out of it saying, hey guys, I had a kick ass year. See you 2020. Have a great rest of your summer.
Like, plant, is it done or is this an inhale?
I feel bad saying it's dead. You know, like, y'all like football, right? With the Tom Brady, where people try to count out touchdown Tom, and then he throws the touchdowns in the final 2 minutes, and then he's back, baby. That's how I feel with E3. It's, you know, it's died before. It's been in high schools, or just, like, not happened. And then it like, roars back, and suddenly Los Angeles is taking over downtown. So I don't want to say it's dead. It had a lot of people there. But I would say E3 has three people that needs to serve, right? Has to serve fans.
Well, listen, if they only got to get three people there, I think that they're fine.
Has to serve Justin. Has to serve the fans, the press.
Stupid Louis, the YouTuber.
The fans, the press, and like GameSpot. That's right? The people who buy and sell the games.
Stop.
And it's like,
I can't believe you've messed that up.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
You've been a professional in this industry for 5 decades.
Retail, press, EB Games. Fans.
Yes. And it's not good at any of those now. For like the press, the idea was back in the day, like 20 years ago, to get the New York Times and Washington Post to like ever write about games. It was like, okay, we all got to come together and do one big event, and then maybe we get a paragraph on like the fourth page of the art section. And now, like, you don't have to do that. For like retail, I mean, GameStop's not like in the best spot in the world, and there are plenty of other events. And for fans, you have things like Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, twist for those listening at home who don't keep up, they have never cared if the Polygons and Joysticks and Kotakus and IGNs of the world were there. They couldn't give a shit.
No, not at all. So they're not really like serving anybody. And I think the idea now is like, well, if this entire model doesn't work, we'll just do fan events. But the problem is they're not PAX. Like PAX has the Penny Arcade Expo has such a leg up on them, and they're not willing to commit all the way. And then on top of that, the ESA, like the company that runs it, just
they've fallen the fuck apart, man.
Yeah, they've like have humored meetings with Trump over violent video games. They did not put all of the personal information for people who registered for E3 as press or influencers behind any security, so that document just leaked. Which, let me tell you, is great for people's safety in the video game community. They're just kind of the pits. And it seems like even without all of the mistakes they're making, that everybody's kind of piecing EA Build like a while ago. Activision shows up sometimes. Microsoft literally just owns a theater in the complex. So they're like, why would we possibly pay you to show up?
The fact that Microsoft flexed nuts at the Game Awards, not at E3, I think tells a lot.
Hey, like, listen, the Video Game Awards are filling in a lot of like what that used to be. Like, there were more announcements, like 100% more announcements in the VGAs this year than in E3, right?
I wouldn't go that far. But it was competitive in a way that it has certainly never ever been.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to E3 2020. I think this was a rough year for all of the bad, terrible managerial mistakes that were made this year. But also just like it's that perfect storm of last year before ostensibly a new console generation rolls around. And so of course it's gonna be like the slowest.
Yeah. I also just think though, like at the end of the day, Apple has proven over the past decade and change that why participate in these events when you can just own your own event and have like, yeah, and completely control it? That makes so much more sense.
I want to talk about Nintendo. My friend, Uncle Nintendo, I have two uncles who work there. They made Mario and Yoshi, and what they've been up to this year, delighting all of us with that Switch Lite. Here's a confession. I just switched back to my Switch Thick.
Why?
Well, because I was playing some stuff with Henry, and not being able to like plug it into the TV was detrimental to that.
Yeah.
Not being able to like just slide the Joy-Cons out and be able to play two players was kind of a pain in the ass. But the Switch Lite I like a lot. I think that was cool. I think that was smart. I think introducing that earlier in the console cycle, that like 2DS style, more budget, more durable sort of model is really neat. I think Nintendo put out a lot of really great stuff this year, a lot of like surprising stuff. I think the recent like update to Mario Maker 2 is really cool, but what was disheartening for me a little bit, I know we're coming off as like super negative, like there really was a lot of good Nintendo stuff. It just really boggles my mind how much ball dropping vis-a-vis online stuff is still going on. It's kind of wild to me. The Mario Maker 2 online experience was like, that is maybe the hardest whiplash from being like psyched out of my mind for a game feature to like, oh no, this isn't good at all. Because the lag was super, super bad. It was kind of tough to find like, creators that were on your friends list. Like the entire system is still like so arcane, and I keep waiting for like the big firmware update, which I saw somebody online point out like hasn't happened yet. Well, I don't know. I mean, this console's been out for what, a year and a half, almost 2 years now. When did it come out? Early 2017, I want to say. With new consoles coming out next year, like I know that Nintendo's not exactly like participating in the exact same space, but like, I'm Charlie Brown with the football right now. Like,
I mean,
surely
it's not
at some
back
point.
End though, it's just like none of these games have been good about implementing online. Like, it's not the fact that they
it
haven't
is
had
the
a
back
end
and
update.
The like that there is still friend codes shit. Like that back end ain't great. Like, that's not a very good back end. I don't know. This is a hyper specific one. I think when we came up with these topics, it was a little bit ago, and this was when I was like really mad about Mario Maker 2 not having like super great online functionality. But like Mario Maker 1 also had like a website that you could like post your link your like level codes to and like save them for later. Like there was a bunch of cool stuff there that was.
I think though it's notable in the context of Mario Maker 2 because it sounds like, from what I've heard from people, like, poor online implementation is what sunk that game and why a lot of people like do not care about it.
Sunk is, I mean, the people who are still like super into that experience are into it. I think that Mario Maker 2 like hasn't had the longevity, certainly for me, even though I think it's a way better game. I think it is because like, it was just a little bit too tough for me to find levels from like people I know and people I follow online. And like, that's the kind of stuff it feels like is just constant. And, there's stuff that I'm really excited about next year, like especially Animal Crossing, where like, I don't want anything to like get in the way of me Tom Nook, forming a new relationship.
Well, something is going to get in the way of this show though. And it's a commercial break.
Yeah, you don't like it when you frame it like that.
Oh, really? That's weird. Well, it's my show. They can come on this show and talk about fucking Mario's hat or whatever we do here if they don't like the way I do things. Russ, you're wearing massive goggles and you're holding what appears to be a katana. If you could come back to us in the real world and okay, he's unhooking from.
He just stabbed a whale with his katana.
He's getting off his treadmill. Okay, come on down here.
He's unplugging some sort of like jelly hoses from his torso.
Okay, Russ.
I'm okay.
He's completely nude and slippery like an eel.
Well, at least that's back to normal.
Okay.
I wanted to talk a little bit about virtual reality, my new passion that lasted for easily 12 hours one day in March this year.
Let's switch topics because I like virtual reality.
No, you guys should defend virtual reality. And honestly, I had a really good time in virtual reality. And I'm just going to keep saying virtual reality because I think brevity is stupid. I really genuinely was had a blast with the Oculus Quest, which was the virtual reality headset that came out this year and was fully wireless. And all the games were like baked into the actual headset. And you could sort of mark your territory, as it were, with a virtual wand, and it made playing VR games like really, really easy and fun and quick. And I was like, damn, this is fun. This is exactly what I needed from VR. Like, the biggest detractor from VR is the like to do required to set it up and wires and batteries and everything. I guess this one does have batteries, but certainly wires, and this eliminated all that. So I was like super jazzed, and we had an Oculus Quest in the office, and I borrowed it over like a long weekend, and I played probably like maybe 4 hours in total and like had a really, really good time, and then had zero desire to ever put one on again, because I think even though it is like smooth and easy to use and all that stuff, I think my brain just can't handle it. It's just too much.
Your brain can't handle fucking anything, Russ.
You think that's
your weird, busted up brain. you can't play a Game Boy Color without yartzing all over the place because you're like, the color is too. I like
it's
the old
true.
Gray
I like
and
the
green
two
shit.
Two grays. That was my favorite.
I've heard from several people now. I've not fooled around with the Quest myself, but I've heard from a lot of people like this is the easiest way. And like to get a decent experience,
yes.
Like, you know,
one problem. Griffin was very kind, and he gave me a Quest, and I was like, "This is great." I have the old Oculus, and I tried to play it in my office, and I couldn't. There's just not enough space. So I was like, "I know what I'll do. I'll get a Quest. I'll go outside where there's all the space in the world, and I'll play the Quest
in the street."
Put the Quest on in my backyard like a responsible human being, and the very first thing it tells me is do not play this outside. As if like a low-flying plane is going to scoot by and suck me into its engine if I'm not paying attention.
Now, Plant, you're a smart guy. You know that there's literally a billion other reasons why
there's
it's a bad idea.
No, it's all low-flying reasons. Planes.
That's where dogs is. That's where dogs is.
That is where dogs is. Wild mad dogs lives in there.
We
on
also
the outside
do have possums. Oh, y'all, side note, but a possum died in our front yard a couple weeks ago. And do you know what happens in Texas when that happens? Vultures.
Nothing.
A dozen vultures come.
Yeah, that's
and then
a
all
good
your
point.
Old neighbors come out and they go, what died? And you say, possum. And they say, yep, makes sense, vultures. As if it's just a thing you should all know.
Wait, did you break the rules and do it anyway?
Of course they did.
I think.
Okay, so here's what I was trying to get to. It seems to me, and tell me if this read is right, that even with a lot of the rough edges sanded off of the VR experience, it seems like, and this is why I think what VR has lacked from the beginning is I'm going to say killer app and yes. Don't like leap in to defend. Cause I know there've been a lot of good VR experiences, but by killer app, I mean something like that is meaty and large in scale and you want to continue to play for a very long time. And it seems like the problem is, as immersive as VR is, the comfort is still not there to where you want to do it for hours on end. So like you can't have that immersive experience, even though it is more immersive. You can't have the kind of like lose yourself experience because it is not something that you want to do in perpetuity.
I mean, physically speaking,
yes.
Like,
yes,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
The hardest I ever got into a game was that Lone Echo game, which is still like probably my favorite VR game I've ever played. It was like that narrative. You're in a spaceship and you just have to like push yourself off the walls. God, it was so, so, so good. But I would play it for long extended periods of time. And because I was like really, really into it, and I would take the headset off and be like sweating because, you know, keeping a screen strapped to your face for 2.5 hours is like not great for you. Quest, I think, ameliorates a lot of that because it is the most comfortable headset that is out there. But in terms of it being a killer app, like it is not. That term doesn't just mean like a good engrossing game. It means a game that makes everyone want to own that piece of hardware. Like Halo was a killer app for the Xbox because people saw that and said, well, I can't not have an Xbox and not play Halo. And so far, I would argue the closest thing we have for that for VR is like Beat Saber.
Or Super Hot.
Or those Super Hot is out on other stuff, right? Super Hot is you can play on other platforms. It is best on VR, of course. You got like the Star Wars like narrative games. Those are all right, but they are the thing that, you know, Oculus is pushing pretty hard is like the big thing. I think I love VR. I think it's cool. And I have had a hell of a time this year, like watching it in its nascency, like watching game developers figure out how to make common video game functions work in a VR space. That stuff's really interesting to me, but I'm an early adopter of nerd shit like that. I think what it's going to take is legitimately some Oasis shit. Like it is going to be, if not Facebook Horizon, think about it, if Facebook Horizon turns out, which is like their online social VR space, like if that could be really fucking cool. If it is good and not like
aspects of it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't fucking ignore the dystopian aspects of it. If you put on a VR headset, you're not allowed to ignore the dystopian aspects of fucking anything. I'm saying like Facebook Horizon has a chance to like, if not that, something like that is going to be what
about Half-Life?
Pushes people into it. I mean, gamers, that's may push some more gamers into the mix, but like, I don't.
I think that's what it needs right now. I mean,
absolutely,
an influx of, hey, listen, we got so much to cover. Griffin, it says here in your contract that you get to talk about Destiny 2 first.
I get to talk about Destiny 2 for, I mean, it was a weird year for Destiny 2. It was a weird year for all like live service games sort of in general, but Destiny 2 is probably the one I played the most of in general this year. They broke up with Activision, which is wild. Mm-hmm. Bungie took the reins of their game back from Activision, which is like, we could spend a whole episode talking about that. That's quite strange. Hey, Activision, what you got going on over there now? Because it was Destiny and Call of Duty and, I don't know, Tony Hawk 6 at some point. I mean,
in Activision's defense, I guarantee they looked at the numbers and they were like, well, it's making this much money and that is expensive, so we should do other things. Like
all of Blizzard. I think
there has been, there's been like a significant, I would say, like tonal change since they went not independent, but you know what I mean. But I guess independent. They broke up with Activision. The game has like changed pretty dramatically, and it has been really neat, like watching this huge, huge, huge game, arguably one of the biggest games out right now, sort of take a major, big swing after breaking up with its longtime business partner.
What do you mean tonal change?
I mean, like, the way that they are handling seasons now is different. Oh, yeah. Just the sheer volume of shit that they changed in the update that followed.
Strategically how they roll out content, essentially.
Strategically how they roll out content, how they do battle. This is, like, the big conversation for, like, a live services game, especially one that is sort of MMO-ish, like Destiny, is, like, how do you put out new content, especially if there's not a subscription fee, right? Like, old school MMOs had that figured out. You pay for the new content by having a subscription fee. Destiny has never had that, right? And so how do you keep putting stuff out and getting people to come back and play? They've never been good about that. I've come back and played every Destiny expansion or update or season or whatever, played it for 2 or 3 days until I finished the story shit and then bounced.
Yeah.
But this was the season, like starting with Season of Opulence, which I think was the last season they did with Activision. Whatever they are, like, the last three seasons have been like pretty good. I've only just started to dip my toes into the most recent release, but like, I feel like Destiny really figured out its like pacing and its stride this year, which, I don't know, man, I've watched a lot of other games sort of shit the bed. Like, I've played an incalculable amount of World of Warcraft and just like, they lost it.
Yeah, people
and
don't like that
Destiny
game, huh? That
Destiny
expansion.
Kind of found it. Yeah, that expansion was bad, and it came up against Shadowbringers, which I still wish we could just do an episode about, but I guess not.
No,
it's never going to happen for me.
Probably not. I'd like to talk about Apple Arcade for a second, because that was a big thing in 2019. And I will admit to being, and I would actually like to hear your guys' thoughts, because I feel like I'm mixed. Okay, so in the beginning, if you're too young to remember, in the beginning, the way games would tend to go viral on the App Store, and that is how discoverability largely worked. Everybody would start talking about something, and then everybody would play it for a while, and then they'd move on to the new thing. And that was the way it worked for a while. And then it got so big, and some other different things happened. There started to be more of a focus on microtransactions and pay-to-win kind of stuff, and it became harder for games to go viral like that, also because it was very diverse, and there was things didn't get the sort of mass heat that they used to. And then Apple Arcade came along, and it was suddenly like you're being surfaced for a very reasonable fee, being surfaced a lot of games that had sort of, like, you would assume passed some sort of smell test that Apple had said, this is good, you'll like this. We've sorted through some of the cruft, which to me was the actual value of it, because I'm not like buying a ton of games on iOS anyway. Like, the value was less the monetary and more like time saved. And at the start, I would say there's like a lot of stuff that I was very into and seemed very worthwhile. I would say that the problem that I have run into is that since it's twofold. One is that since they don't have 100 games all at once anymore, the hit rate for me has gone down considerably since the service launched. It is much more rare that I find something on there that I'm like desperate to play. I think that's problem one. Problem two is that it's still just a tab in the App Store. I think it should be its own app. I think they should break it out into something that is easier to separate.
Why does that matter to you?
One, I think it makes it harder to separate things and sort through things as they get new games in there, it is harder to find the kind of stuff that you would actually want. It also keeps it from being top of mind because you it's buried there in the app store. So that is, I think it's a meaningful difference. The third thing I would say though is that a lot of games that were in that old model of the microtransactions, I shouldn't say old model, it's still the main model for most iOS games, they are designed to keep you playing. They are designed to be a little bit hookier, I would think, because they desperately need you to keep playing them. Sure. And that can be a little predatory sometimes, but it's also something I miss.
Right.
In a lot of these games, it's kind of like take them or leave them. Like it's fun, but it doesn't have the sort of like addictive nature that a lot of these other ones do.
Even though they were like designed specifically with like you had to buy turns to beat a level, like that.
Well, no, the game I've played most is, and this is probably true for you too, Russ, is Fire Emblem Heroes, yes. Right? And it's a gachapon style game, and I get it, but like it's also a great game. Yeah. It just has like all of these long tail hooks and all these microtransaction things. Same for all the Super Stickman golf games, Golf Blitz.
Yeah, sure.
Like I played a lot of that game, but that type of game, I don't think works on Apple Arcade because of the way, well, it's a free to play game.
No,
that
the
is
original
sort of built,
Super Stickman. Yeah,
sure. But those, I'm talking about like, Justin has just like brought up something, which is like, I can't understand why I have not really clicked with Apple Arcade. And it's because all of the games I've ever really loved on iOS were games that had like run a okay balance of hey, it's free to play and there's microtransactions, but we're going to put content out for it like forever.
So you didn't get into like Grindstone or Card of Darkness? Or
I got into Grindstone. Card of Darkness I hit a wall with. Grindstone was very good. Yeah. That was one of the original ones where I was like, okay, this is excellent. I think that one got a little too tough as well. For just it wasn't as accessible. Can I say something else that really bothers me about Apple Arcade? Mm-hmm. There is a, like, I know it's short, but whenever you start an Apple Arcade game, there is an Apple Arcade card that has to pop up. And it's such a fundamental misunderstanding of how how I'm using iOS for gaming. Like there's a lot of the Apple Arcade games actually that are a little indulgent with that. Like if you don't need to get in and buy loot boxes, we're going to go ahead and show you a few logos if that's okay every time you start the game.
You actually just reminded me to unsubscribe, which I did. While you're talking through this.
That's ice cold, dude.
I think the thing, I never really thought about this, why I don't unsubscribe from, say, like Hulu, even if I go a month without watching anything on it. But Hulu, it's like, I don't know, maybe there'll be something here and there that's a half hour that I'll enjoy. But once I've played the games that I want to play on one of these services, and there's nothing else, I don't need to be a subscriber to it until something new pops. I got my worth out of Grindstone and Card of Darkness. Now I'm done. So why would I keep paying for it?
Now Plan only plays games on Google Stadia.
Yeah, yo.
Oh, gosh, y'all. So I got to play.
How's it going over there?
I got to play the Google Stadia. I actually did it at my in-laws because I wanted the most optimal Google experience. I set them up with the Google Wi-Fi last year because they're always asking me to fix their internet. And that's super easy. Google Wi-Fi. So I tested it with Google Wi-Fi in Chrome, literally sitting next to a router and modem spitting out like, I don't know, 200 megaseconds or something. Optimal. And the results were like, fine, like okay. It the games looked fine, maybe like console grade. There was stuttering on some games, but not on others. It was like a really cool tech demo. And that, I guess, is neat. But then I like started thinking about the past decade and how many times have we been talking about really cool tech demos like this, like On Live or PS Now, which I think people have just forgotten that Sony already has a cloud gaming service out there. And I know we're supposed to say, hey, the next decade, it's cloud gaming, baby. Like, this is the future. If you want to be into games, you better embrace the cloud.
Can we start calling it the Gloud?
The Gloud?
Probably not.
You don't think that's going to take off, the Gloud?
You're the worst.
I don't think the Gloud is going to be it.
I think it might be.
Oh, like the Google Cloud?
Probably not.
Let me check with everyone, guys. No, man. Everyone's saying no to the Cloud.
It's a hard no. I tested xCloud, the Microsoft one, and that one, so far, what I've tried, works really well. But again, like, I don't know. The best theory that I can come up with for when I think cloud gaming is going to really blow up is next gen comes, right? and a new GTA comes out, or a new Madden, and you can only play it on next-gen consoles. Now, all the people who would normally buy one of those expensive pieces of hardware will go, I don't know, to the internet.com, and they'll look it up, and they'll be like, oh, I can spend $500 plus the $60 for the game to play it on the new Xbox or the new PlayStation, or I can just buy the game for $60 and play it over the cloud on whatever service I want. And at that moment, I feel like we'll start to see like critical mass, when people suddenly only have the option of buying a new piece of hardware or using the cloud. Right now, while I think most people who want to play these games have the hardware to do it, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. And I suspect that we won't see the cloud be the only option. Microsoft has been saying this for a while, and again, I was kind of skeptical, but now I think they're right. It'll be like Kindle, you know? If you want to play a hardcore, you can play on a PC. If you want to, you know, have a reliable but average price, you can play on your console. If you don't mind stuttering now and then and like lower end graphics, you can play it on the cloud. And ideally, like, you buy it once and it works on all those options. That sounds great to me.
I just want remote play on next gen stuff. The remote play app for iOS for PlayStation 4 is remarkable.
Yeah, it's what great.
I've been playing. Like, I've been playing a ton of FF14, like, on my iPad connected to a DualShock 4, and like, it runs really great. Like, that's what I want. I want to own my games on my box and then play it wherever I want on my phone, but not like have to buy them from Google. And then also, like, that's where they live now. Now, yeah. I have given Google $70 for
something. It's so weird that they kept that library sort of metaphor for Stadia. It seems like such a misunderstanding of what I kind of want to get in there and just like fuck around with the game. I don't want to like buy something and have it live on Google. Yeah.
If it was Microsoft doing that, and it was literally everything was the same except it was Microsoft, and instead of buying games, you had Xbox Game Pass, and like that was it. You paid the subscription, you paid the annual subscription, weekly subscription, monthly subscription for that, and you had access to like all these games. That's great. But I'm not going to buy Destiny. I'm not going to buy, that's a bad example because that one's free, but I'm not going to buy, you know, Tomb Raider on Stadia. That's
it. Also, what? Neglects trust. Like, I would buy a game on cloud streaming only from Microsoft because I know it's going to be around.
I bought games on PlayStation Now I think you could stream like PS2, PS3 games on your PS4. You bought them. And so I did that, and it works, and it's fine. And it's on my PS4, right, a box I'm going to own for the rest of my life.
I want to check in with the people. Mail@besties.fan is our email address. We'll tell you what we want to talk about here in a second. But here's what we asked this for this episode. We asked you to talk about your best things of 2019. Alex says, id Software's willingness to delay the release of Doom Eternal in order to deliver their authentic vision should be celebrated. All right, Alex. Okay, Alex.
I feel that. I feel that same. Yeah.
Hey, y'all, if the best thing that happened in 2019 was something not happening, that's a rough year, okay? Oof. Drew Davenport says, in the year 2019, I bought a PlayStation Vita, and it's my highlight. That's good. Vitas are good.
Man, yeah, okay. Was there something? Is there somebody who's got...
I mean, we did just finish an entire episode where we were pretty negative, which I feel bad about now.
Here's a good one. Eric said, my personal highlight was EVO 2019, where they finally put Under Night in Birth, a gorgeous, deep, and extremely horribly named fighting game by a very small team on the big stage, and had a fantastic showing. Even if you don't give a shit about fighting games, it warms my heart to see game quality and fan dedication shine, even without all of big games. Gaming's big money. So that's called Under Night in Birth, which is rough.
Yeah, it could use a bit of a tweak there.
It's rough. Tyler says Kingdom Farts 3 may have been Kingdom Farts 3 may have been a real stinker, but watching Buzz Lightyear's heart turn to darkness made it all worth it.
We have a negative. I'm going to say my positive thing is the entire Toy Story chapter, all the JRPG shit that they make fake Tim Allen say and fake Tom Hanks say. Well, gosh, Space Ranger, it looks like Sephiroth has corrupted your heart soul.
So thank you to everyone who submitted your great moments.
It was a wild and crazy year, y'all. I know we sounded super negative, but like I think it's the same way that like there wasn't one standout game that everybody's agreeing is the goatee of this year. Like, I don't think there were a ton of like highlights for everyone.
I mean, there were good games. Like, we did just spend two straight episode talking about like a pretty large list of very, very good games. So I'm not necessarily saying it was a bit, but it was this weird like transition.
Calm before the storm, man. Yeah.
We want to hear from you again. mail@besties.fan. Let us know your most anticipated game of 2020 and you could be on next week's episode. Just tell us what you're looking forward to and why.
That is the end of the episode.
Fucking good.
Nailed it. No. In all seriousness, if you're listening to us on iTunes or various other feeds, you should know that this is actually going to be the final episode that you will get in your normal feed. We are moving on to all episodes being...
We're dying.
We're dying.
We're going to live with your pop-pop on a big farm. And that farm's called Spotify.
No, starting...
Also, your pop-pop's new album on Spotify.
It's fire, dude. It's so choice.
Starting January 3rd, all episodes of The Besties, new episodes moving forward, will be exclusive to Spotify. So all you really need to do is pop on over and follow and listen for free on Spotify. It is free. You don't need a paid account or anything like that. But literally, there will not be new episodes on this feed if you're listening to it on a place that's not Spotify. So please
come listen to us there. Please.
We the show will probably not exist if you don't come listen to us there. So maybe do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be a we promised a lot of shit, okay? Listen, we made a lot of big promises.
We wrote a lot of checks with our mouths.
Yeah, so please come listen to us and be sure to join us again next time for The Besties.
Hey, yo, am I coming with you?
No!
Hey, I'm backing up the car.
Am I making the trip?
The giraffe is bitten onto the rear bumper of the car and is now bouncing along the street as we speed away.
Guys, hold up.
We're bringing New York Giraffe with us too. Fine, Ayo! Stop emailing us. Be sure to join us again next time for The Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
The Besties is a Spotify original podcast. In association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!